Okay, well, this morning I'm taking over for Steve. As you realize, Steve's not here. He's in Lima, whatever, Ohio, for perfecting the Saints rally or something like that. But anyway, he asked me to speak last Thursday morning and do this class. And so, you know, I usually try to either, you know, supplement what they're going through, which I'm not going to do. With, in this case, with Steve, he's going through all these different, you know, scriptures that are quoted in the Old Testament scriptures that are quoted in the New Testament. So I'm not going to do that. So I also, other times I try to just, whatever's in my mind, whatever's rolling through my mind at that time, to kind of be able to put my thoughts onto a piece of paper, which for me can be kind of difficult sometimes. But anyway, so one of the things I've been thinking about when Steve asked me was about, you know, giving thanks or being thankful to God. This can tie in, I think, well with what Rain had to say in the opening this morning. But I'd been thinking about, you know, being thankful, or thankfulness, expressing thankfulness to God for a couple of reasons. One was the fact that I think Charlie, I guess like 3 Lord's Days ago, on Lord's Day evening, he delivered a message about, you know, being just thankful in prayer and so on. And afterwards, after Charlie's message, I made a comment to him how, you know, how being thankful in our prayers, it really does humble us, because it helps to mitigate, or helps to reduce, the likelihood that we are going to take credit for whatever accomplishments we might do in our lives. And if we're giving thanks to God all the time, then we realize that it's God who's giving us the opportunity, God who's providing the door of opportunity, so to speak, for us to accomplish certain things, and that, you know, we're kind of a low man, have the thing. He's the guy who's opening the doors. We're just the ones who have to, you know, get up and go through those doors. But by being thankful, it really reduces the likelihood that we're going to start taking credit for things, and that, I think, would glorify God. But the other thing another reason I've been thinking about that, just because I think, as kind of brought out in the prayer session on Wednesday night, that thanks to God, I had the opportunity to sell the business that I started 18 years ago along with Amelia, and I'm very thankful for that. And so I've been going through those kind of things in my head the last couple of weeks as well. Not that I had not been all along, I had been, but just this last couple of weeks has been even more in the forefront of my mind, just to kind of going over things that took place over those 18 years, and just being, you know, thankful again for the opportunities and the struggles that we went through. So if we're not habitually giving thanks to God daily for who He is and what He has done, then we're not going to truly comprehend or be appreciative of what He's done. It takes that daily, you know, habit, I guess would be the right word, of giving thanks, so that we can truly comprehend, truly appreciate the things that God's done for us. Giving thanks to God, it should be so natural. It should be just like, you know, breathing is. You know, we don't even think about it. We just do it all day long. And so being thankful is kind of the same type of thing. Being appreciative and being thankful to God. It's just seeing all the things that God's done, not only in our lives, but even other people's lives, or just in the creation in general, the things that God's provided through the creation that has allowed us to even be here. And our appreciation of God's forgiveness is going to move us to obedience. And that's something I'll talk about, you know, towards the end of this class here. It's just how by us being appreciative of what God's done for us, it's going to then motivate us or move us towards being obedient. And lastly, then, Jay made a comment, it must have been years ago, probably in the late 90s, when he was going over the 3:16s of the Bible. And I don't know what book 3:16 it happened to have been, but I think it was later in the New Testament. But he made the comment towards the end of the message, and it's always stuck in my mind. He said, if you aren't thankful to people, you know, who you do see, you're not going to be thankful to God who you cannot see. You know, and that's it's always stuck with me. You know, I think, you know, even though those words, you won't find those words in the Bible. But it is something we recognize, that, you know, if people who are around us, if we can't be thankful for them, how are we going to be thankful to God? So it starts by being thankful to others around us. But this morning I want to focus on giving thanks to God. Turn, if you would, to Deuteronomy chapter 8. And We're going to start off by reading the entire chapter here, Deuteronomy chapter 8. And as many as you know, Deuteronomy was there's a number of times in Deuteronomy where Moses is basically preaching to the Israelites, and this is his last month on earth. It's the last month out of the 40 years that they've been wandering through the wilderness. So he's just giving them a synopsis of the last 40 years, but he's also giving them some warnings of what's going to happen or what they need to do after he's gone. So beginning in verse 1 of Deuteronomy 8, Moses says, "All the commandments that I am commanding you today, you shall be careful to do, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land which the Lord swore to give to your forefathers. And you shall remember all the way which the Lord your God has led you in the wilderness these 40 years, that he might humble you, testing you, to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. And he humbled you and let you be hungry and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you understand that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by everything that proceeds out of the mouth of the Lord. Your clothing did not wear out on you, nor did your foot swell these 40 years. Thus you are to know in your heart that the Lord your God was disciplining you, just as a man disciplines his son. Therefore you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God to walk in his ways and fear them. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks and water, of fountains and springs, flowing forth in valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, a land where you shall eat food without scarcity, in which you shall not lack anything, a land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills you can dig copper. When you have eaten and are satisfied, you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which he has given you. Beware lest you forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments and his ordinances and his statutes, which I am commanding you today. Lest when you have eaten and are satisfied and have built good houses and lived in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and gold multiply and all that you have multiplies, then your heart becomes proud and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out from the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. He led you through the great and terrible wilderness with his fiery serpents and scorpions and thirsty ground where there was no water. He brought water for you out of the rock of flint. In the wilderness, he fed you manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might test you to do good for you in the end. Otherwise, you may say in your heart, my power and my strength and my hand made me this wealth. But you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who is giving you the power to make wealth, that he may confirm his covenant, which he swore to your fathers, as it is this day. And it shall come about, if you ever forget the Lord your God, and go after other gods, and serve them and worship them, I testify against you today that you shall surely perish, like the nations that the Lord makes to perish before you, so you shall perish, because you would not listen to the voice of the Lord your God." So our best defense against, forgetting what God has done is to make it a daily habit of ours to give him thanks. You know, he says there in verse 18, "But you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who is giving you the power to make wealth." You know, it's God who gives us the opportunities. It's not us. It's not by, it's not by our will or by our power. Yeah, we have to get up in the morning. We have to do the things that we do. But it's God who's given us the opportunities to do the things that we do, whatever that might be. Look at verse 3 again. "And he humbled you and let you be hungry and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you understand that man does not live by bread alone, but by everything that proceeds out of the mouth of the Lord." So God provides also the rough times. You know, he provides the rough times so that we don't forget that it is him who is providing. I mean, if everything went smoothly in our lives, it'd be real easy to forget. that God is in control. God's the one who's providing. If food's always on the table, if our health is always good, if the car always starts, those kind of things, then there's no struggles. There's no difficulties in our lives then the tendency of mankind is that they're going to forget that God's in the picture, and they're going to begin to take credit themselves for the things that they've been able to accomplish. And then, as I mentioned earlier, lately I've been giving attention in my prayers just to the opportunities that God's provided me over the 18 years just for the Bagel Works. Again, it's nothing new. I do that all the time. But, you know, just these last couple of 3 weeks, 4 weeks since we had a contract signed, it's just been more, you know, more in the forefront of my mind. I've been all along recognizing, you know, or giving thanks to God for all the, you know, the good things, the bad things, the ugly things that have happened over the last 18 years while I've been there. And I'm just going to list, I'm going to go through a few of them here, and then I'll move on to something else. But just, you know, every day, just the employees, every day that I go into work, not every day, but most every day that I went to work, I made it a point on the way into work to pray for the employees. I usually prayed for me having the skills to manage them properly, which I'm not sure how good they're on those in that end. But I prayed for their welfare. I prayed that that'd be a good place for them to work, a wholesome place for them to work. But I also prayed for their safety and for their health, because there's lots of dangerous equipment there. There's knives, there's slicers, there's mixers, there's the oven. There's a lot of things. There's a lot of people could slip and fall on their way to work. They could slip and fall on dirt or cornmeal or flour that happens to be on the floor. In all those years, you know, we had a number of, you know, cut fingers. I mean, I had more than a handful of cut fingers. But everybody, you know, everybody cut their fingers. But pretty much, you know, I think with the exception of a few, none of them required any stitches. I think a couple people had to go to, like, urgent care and get stitched up. Sean's showing his maybe, huh? I think the worst safety thing, first, you know, health concern or a safety concern we had was one of the girls. She had a pan that came out of the oven. Our oven is like 500 degrees, and she had a cookie sheet, and she's holding it, and it slipped, and it landed on her forearm. So she burned her arm. She burned her forearm pretty severely. But, you know, she healed from it, and so on and so forth. But that was like the worst thing that happened. I mean, and so over 18 years, I'm very thankful that God has, you know, been able. He was the one who provided that safety. Now you can look at it and say, well, gee, other businesses have been around for 18 years, and they haven't had any big, you know, medical emergencies. And that's true, but I wouldn't want to go back and have to do it over again and leave out prayer part of it, because again, there's our mixer alone could have easily torn somebody's arm off. I mean, the thing is like ancient. It's like, I mean, 50, 60, 70 years old, the mixer, and it's really, really powerful, and there's no safeties on it. I mean, if somebody's arm gets stuck in there, that arm is going to get chopped off and sucked right in. You know, so I'm very thankful nothing severe happened. It's an everything bagel, exactly. Yeah. So I mean, you know, so again, the only emergency that required a trip to the hospital, you know, real emergency, was this burned forearm. You know, I've always been thankful for our customers. I realize any business, you know, we can't survive without employees. We also can't survive, you know, without customers. And it's God who allows them to come in our door. And you know, early on, I tell you, you know, those of you who remember back that far, our parking lot was dirt, okay? And we opened up on March 15th, and we were from New Jersey. We had no idea what April and May were going to bring for us, you know, as far as weather. Well, it snowed like almost every day. If it didn't snow, it rained. And so our parking lot was like a mud hole back there. But yet customers came. I'm surprised. I mean, we did everything we possibly could do to keep customers away. And one of them was this giant lake we had out back. It was a big mud hole. Then once things dried up back there, it began to get hot. Well, Amelia and I, we're pretty cheap, and we had a budget when we opened the shop, and we didn't want to borrow any money. So we didn't have any exhaust fans over our ovens, over our boiler, which boils off about 50 gallons of water a day, okay, into the air. So we didn't have any ventilation other than just some open windows in the shop. Now, again, being from New Jersey, Amelia and I, we had no problem with the humidity. I mean, we were used to 95 degrees and 100% humidity. But our customers weren't, and they're sitting out front. You know, they got sweat dripping down their cheeks. And in fact, I go, even today, if there's customers in there who, you know, recollect back to when we started, I give them thanks for being there. And I remind them about the mud hole, and I remind them about, you know, the sweat coming down their cheeks. But, you know, God provides those things. That's not because we happen to have a product that people want. No, God provided those customers despite the errors on our part, despite, you know, us, our being cheap and not paving the parking lot or not you know, putting in exhaust fans. You know, I've been thankful all along for my health. You know, I haven't missed a day at DagoWorks in 18 years for being sick. I had some colds here and there, but never anything severe enough that I had to miss a day of work. And that particularly became, poignant or whatever, when Amelia developed, you know, cancer in 1997, because for good or bad, we didn't have the shop set up right, and really she and I were the only ones at that time who could bake. With her out of the picture, because she was home dealing with her cancer, and if I had slipped on some ice, if I had been stopped at a stop sign and somebody rear-ended me and hurt my back, you know, well, we would have been sunk because we weren't prepared in the event that I couldn't have been there. And I'm not making myself out to be indispensable. I'm just thankful to God that He covered me, even though we weren't, like I said, we weren't prepared for that possibility. So, you know, thankful for the fact that I have good health. And I realized that health can change at any moment. And, you know, Blake just had this, you know, he got caught in a fire. He wasn't planning on that first thing in the morning. That wasn't on his to-do list to go to the hospital that day because he had severe burns. I got a brother-in-law. We all have stories like this. My brother-in-law, my sister just recently sold a business they have back in Massachusetts. And he found out that he had colon cancer and that the cancer has gone to his liver. I mean, the guy's got months to live because he's got very severe in his liver. But so here he is one day, just like anybody else, one day we're going great, and the next day we have like a death notice, you know, given to us. So it's just important to be given thanks to God for our health because it is so fragile. It is so temporary. Any of us on the way home from church today could be in a car accident through no fault of our own, but just because of the circumstances, somebody else's, you know, inattentiveness or our own inattentiveness could cause an accident. So thankful for that. You know, I've always been thankful for the Bozeman economy. You know, and all of us in this room have benefited from the Bozeman economy being strong. We all have jobs, and so whether we're, you know, directly tied to, say, tourism or some of the other strong factors in this valley, MSU, we're all indirectly affected by the tourism, indirectly affected by, say, MSU being up there, and the fact that our economy here is strong. And God plays a role in that. It's not because we got a bunch of, you know, smart people here running our city, heaven forbid, you know, but it's because in despite of them, you know, making some poor judgments, the economy still rolls. And that, like our health, that can go any minute. So we don't want to become complacent about it, or, you know, think this is going to last until forever and ever. You know, the Bozeman economy could change tomorrow morning. And so you got to be thankful for the fact that we have that. You know, one of the things I'm kind of thinking now over the years, I've always been thankful for is, you know, here, like any day during the week, if I need certain ingredients or certain, goods from that come from other vendors, whether they be drinks, whether they be flour, sugar, whatever, you know, I just pick up the phone and I place an order. Now, and it, you know, miraculously, you know, the product arrives pretty much on a schedule. And it just, I pay my bills on time and products arrive on time. It's a great system we got. And the nice thing about it is, for the most part, the government is out of the equation. Because if I had to call Helena to get my flour delivered on Monday, you know, okay, fill out three forms and, you know, send it up to us and maybe we'll get to it, whatever, we won't get to it. But things work out pretty efficiently. And that's not by accident. That's by because of the overall economy we have here in the United States, the overall economic system. You know, a number of you have, you know, if you traveled, you know, I'm trying to look who's been traveling, but I don't see Leanne here, but she's been to Ghana. You have been to Ghana or, say, the Philippines, any third world type of country. Things don't work that way. I mean, you might order things, but it might not show up because the trucks break down, because this happens, that happens. And they happen on a regular basis, so you really can't count on anything actually being there. But we can be pretty efficient in just the fact that we, because of our economy in the United States in general, but because of our economy specifically here in Bozeman. So it's in closing that up, though. But Amelia and I, we regularly reminded each other about all the challenges and struggles we experienced, particularly at the beginning, and we always understood that it was God who was providing those struggles, those challenges, and, you know, oh, we were always mindful of, you know, his part of it, his place in the equation, realizing that if he wasn't there, you know, then we wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't be able to do the things that we did. And I guess one more thing I have down here, because I see my notes here. One thing that I had down here is that even just in finding the location, the location wasn't a particularly good location. It's hard to get into, you know, as far as traffic is concerned. But what the biggest benefit about the location is that it's right next to Bozeman Printing and Quick Copy. Okay. You know, Amelia and I, we moved here. We weren't Christians. And I brought this up before. We weren't Christians. And so when we first were here, though, we got the idea in a couple of days. We moved here in early August of 1990, and we had the idea in a couple of days later and began working on it right away. And we started looking around for various locations to rent. And we also wanted, we had the desire to be able to someday buy that real estate as well. But so we had a couple of deals that actually fell through. You know, one landlord, the rent was going to be an exorbitant rent, and we had no idea it was an exorbitant rent because we hadn't done our homework. But the landlord was going to charge us $1,600 a month rent. This is 18 years ago for, I don't know, it was 2,500 square feet, something like that. It was a phenomenal amount of money for Bozeman market. It didn't faze us because it was relatively cheap compared to back east. But the next day, I went into that landlord's office. You know, Amelia was outside; she was watching her bicycles, and I went inside the landlord's office to pick up the keys because we wanted to go measure the space so that we could prepare a layout with the oven and so on and so forth. I walked into his office and, you know, shook his hand, and he said to me, you know, I was thinking about it last night, and I've got to raise the rent, you know, $25 more. I just got it marked out. I said, no deal. We had a handshake, it was no deal. But that was the best thing I ever walked away from, because that location was up by the university, and subsequent to that, first of all, the rent was way too high. Secondly, subsequent to that, roads up in the last 18 years of the university have gotten closed off, and that location would have been an absolute disaster for us. I mean, it would have been a poor location. We would have eventually had to, you know, move within 2 or 3 years, which would have been a great expense for us. So just the way that God worked that out, the disappointments. See, disappointments are also something to be thankful for. Okay, let's turn back a couple pages over to Deuteronomy chapter 6. This is Moses again giving some more exhortation to the people of Israel. These are familiar verses. I'm going to read verses 4 through 13. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and with all your might. And these words which I'm commanding you today shall be on your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. And you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. And you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Then it shall come about, when the Lord your God brings you into the land which he swore to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you, great and splendid cities which you did not build, and houses full of good things which you did not fill, and hewn cisterns which you did not dig, vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant, and you shall eat and be satisfied. Then watch yourself, lest you forget the Lord who brought you from the land of Egypt and out of the house of slavery. You shall fear only the Lord your God, and you shall worship him and swear by his name. So the exhortation here by Moses is for, you know, remember God. Remember what he did for you. He's got to be in front of your mind. Going in your house, going out of your house, everything you're doing, God's going to be in the forefront of your mind. You know, don't, when you get the things that God's going to give you, don't forget who it was who gave you those things. Well, what was the result of Moses' exhortation? Well, Moses dies. They go into the promised land. They get the things that God had said he would provide. Moses said God would provide. And they quickly forgot. You know, the book of Judges, you know, follows the time after they had conquered the land of Canaan. And we don't have time to go through it today, but if you read the book of Judges as a whole, you'll see there's a bunch of cycles. The Jews go from, you know, they go from rock bottom, they're crying out to God, they're in slavery, you know, they're being oppressed by their enemies and so on and so forth. Oh, God, please save us. God does. He gives them a deliverer. He gives them a judge to raise them up, Okay, the bellies become full. The houses, you know, the gardens get planted nicely and so on and so forth. Everything's taken care of. Everything seems to be going smoothly. And what do? They promptly forget about God. Well, it takes them maybe a generation or two or three, and then they slowly go down again. And it's not until they hit rock bottom again is that they cry out to God. You know, unfortunately, that's just human. I mean, it's human nature or whatever. Not to, on the way down, they ought to be able to correct themselves and say, oops, we're slipping here. You know, we need to remember God. And they just keep on going down. They keep on declining until they're in slavery again. And then they cry out to God. God provides them a deliverer again. And they get raised up. They get their bellies full. The borders are protected, so on and so forth. And what do? They promptly forget God. You know, we can look at America, American history, and you'll see the same thing, you know, having taken place. People came over from Europe. They wanted religious freedom. They came over here so they could pursue that. God, they were seeking God. They were seeking to serve God, seeking to know who God was. God blessed this land. Then America got prosperous. It had safe borders and so on and so forth. And what's happening? Well, we're slowly, you know, generation after generation, we're slowly forgetting about God. As Christians, it's our responsibility is to take Moses' advice. Remember, all these things written in the Old Testament are there for our learning, they're for our understanding, so that we can do these things, do the good things that God told us to do, and be blessed by it, or secure by it, whatever. Or you have a choice of, you know, not doing those things, ignoring God, and then we're going to suffer the consequences that the Jews suffered, those who disobeyed, those who forgot who God was. And by praising God or giving God thanks every day, it's going to reduce the likelihood of that actually happening. So in the period of Judges is a situation there, I think in just one book you get a big picture of a lot of history. But you see a number of cycles of where the Jews go, you know, get oppressed, they raise up, they get peace and security, they fall back down on their face again, and they go back into slavery because they've forgotten who God was. They fail to take the advice. So we want to be the kind of people who heed the advice and not fail to obey it. Let's turn over to Luke chapter 17. This is Luke 17. This is a story about those 10 lepers being cleansed, and I'm not gonna draw, you know, conclusions that I don't think I can make out of here. But I just want to point this out here. Luke 17. This should be familiar to all of us. Beginning in verse 11, I'll read 11 through 19. Luke writes in verse 11, and it came about that while he was on the way to Jerusalem, that he was passing between Samaria and Galilee, and he entered a certain village. 10 leprous men who stood at a distance met him, and they raised their voices, saying, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. And when he saw them, he said to them, go and show yourselves to the priest. And it came about, as they were going, they were cleansed. Now one of them, when he saw that he had been healed, turned back, glorifying God with a loud voice. And he fell on his face at his feet, giving thanks to him, and he was a Samaritan. And Jesus answered and said, were there not 10 cleansed? But the 9, where are they? Was no one found who turned back to give glory to God except this foreigner? And he said to him, rise and go your way. Your faith has made you well. Again, I'm not going to draw any conclusion like, you know, 10% of people give thanks to God. But it's just here's an example of there were 10 people who got you know, cleansed of the leprosy. And 9 of them just totally blew Jesus off. And just, they got cleansed. They got what they wanted and couldn't even go back to thank him for what he had done. You know, so we don't want to be like the 9. We want to be like the 1. And taking time to recognize. I mean, for these guys, it should have been obvious who cleansed them. Okay. Sometimes, you know, God's blessings are not so obvious. We have to have that mindset. We have to be, you know, not so much looking for them, but we have to make ourselves aware of what God's done for us, and taking notice of these things, because the world doesn't take notice. The world's not going to remind us. You're not going to see in the news the 10 top things God's done for us today. That's not going to be in the news ever. Okay, we have to make it our priority to cite things to God, the good things that He's done for us. It may not be to us directly. It may just be to the whole world in general. Just the fact that He's got a blue sky or something, air to breathe, whatever. And okay, so you know, do we give thanks to God? I'm going to speed this up a little bit. Do we give thanks to God for answered prayer? Let's turn to, I'm going to skip one verse. Let's turn to Psalm 5. I'm going to bring something out here. And I've used this in a prayer meditation before. Psalm 5. Again, this is all about having a habit of looking for what God's done. If you train your mind to do these things, then it does become automatic. Then it does become like just breathing. You just do it without even thinking. You just constantly can find things to praise God for or give God thanks for. We'll begin in verse 1, down to verse 3. Give ear to Psalm 5. Give ear to my words, O Lord. Consider my groaning. Heed the sound of my cry for help, my King and my God. For to you do I pray. In the morning, O Lord, will you hear my voice. In the morning, I will order my prayer to you and eagerly watch. So here you have David wrote this psalm. He talks about how in the morning he prays, but then he eagerly watches for God's response, for God, for the answered prayer. You know, how many of us make that a habit? To when we give our prayers, are we then more attentive? Are we then watching or trying to, you know, pick up how has God answered this prayer that we just did, or the prayer from last month that we've done repeatedly, whatever? Are we you know, tuning in? Are we to what God's done for us? Or are we, like the rest of the world, you know, totally oblivious to God's existence and just expect that when we ask for something, God should somehow, you know, God should somehow provide it? You know, we take note on our Wednesday night prayer sessions, the once a month prayer sessions. You know, generally, the request section, like I think always, the request section is always longer than the Thanksgiving section. You know, we make requests, and that's good, but it really should not Thanksgiving section be longer, you know, more things in it than our request section. You know, requests are legitimate, but God answers those requests. So once he answers one, we don't just forget about it. We want to take time to acknowledge God, that it was God who answered that prayer. And sometimes, and a lot of times, it doesn't happen. The answered prayer may not come out the way that we would have designed it in our minds, or the way we asked for it. But it always comes out the best way. It comes out what's best, you know, best for us, best for God. So we need to be more in tune when we're asking for things, to also be, you know, praising God or giving God thanks when he answers those prayers, or even the prayers he doesn't answer, because sometimes prayers that aren't answered, when they're still answered, but just not, maybe not in the way that we think they will be, or they may get answered years in the future. Not, again, you know, I ask for something or I pray for something, and maybe I want, you know, because I'm like a kid, you know, I want the thing, the prayer answered, you know, today. But God may have a different plan. It may not get answered for 10 years. It may not get answered until, you know, you or I are dead before the prayer actually gets answered. So we want to make sure that we're, you know, thankful in our prayers. Are we only thankful for the good things that God provides? You know, it's easy to praise God or give God thanks when things are going well. You know, but are we thankful when we get sick? Are we thankful when things don't work? Are we thankful when we get a flat tire? You know, type of things. Because that flat tire may have saved us from an accident. You know, we don't know. So we got to get in the habit of being thankful for the things that don't go necessarily go our way. Turn over to Job chapter 2. Again, this should be familiar. Job chapter 2. And you know, if things aren't working out for you on any particular day, you think the whole world's caving in on you. You know, Job chapter 1, Job chapter 2 are good, you know, good things just to sit down and read and realize that, you know what? Whatever happened to me today, Job had it a whole lot worse. You know, I mean, he lost his entire family, except his wife, who Steve Doty likes to point out was there to nag her. You know, but he lost all his children, lost all his livestock, his livelihood, and then in chapter 2, you know, he loses his health. Okay, so not only did he just totally wiped out in one day, plus his family, and then in chapter 2, you know, God allows Satan to take away Job's health, and he's sitting there covered with you know, sores from head to toe. Let's pick it up in verse 8 here. And he, Job, took a potsherd to scrape himself while he was sitting among the ashes. Then his wife said to him, "Do you still hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die." But he said to her, "You speak as one of the foolish women speak. Shall we indeed accept good from God and not accept adversity?" In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. So Job was, you know, praising God. Back in chapter 1, he says, "Naked I came in the world, naked I'm leaving. You know, blessed be the name of the Lord." Job had the right perspective. You see, it's our, you know, God's blessing is not measured by the number of things we have or our health or anything. God has blessed us by allowing us to have the opportunity for forgiveness of sins. So, you know, we all of us came in naked in this world. We're all leaving this world naked. And we're all leaving, you know, we're leaving without any money. We're leaving without any things, you know, our favorite toys or whatever. We came in with nothing. We're leaving with nothing. And so if God decides to take it away, or things, you know, disappear on us, or health disappears on us, that's God's prerogative. And if he, you know, if at the end of the day today, I'm in a wheelchair and never walk again, well, praise be to God. You know, I don't want that to happen. But if that's what God needs, if that's what God's purpose is, then so be it. You know, it's, you know, God really has, God has, you know, we are God's property. I've seen those T-shirts, you know, it's God's property. You know, we're God's property. He can do with us whatever he chooses to do. And whatever he does with us, we need to be glorifying, giving him thanks for that, and not, you know, when things aren't going our way, doing as Job's wife suggested, you know, cursing God. And maybe we wouldn't do that, but just by not being thankful, we're not showing the proper humility, the proper, you know, what's the right word? Honor to God. Because we need to praise God when things are going bad, and we need to praise God when things are going good. It's always easy to be thankful when you get a pay raise, but are you thankful if you get laid off? You know, it's thankful. You can be thankful when you get a new house or something like that, but are you thankful when the roof leaks? You know, I mean, Tom's always thankful when roofs leak because that's work for him. But, you know, most of us, you know, I mean, those kind of struggles, those kind of things, is not so easy to be thankful for. In fact, you know, when she got cancer, and she and I talked about this, and I talked about it with others as well, but we always considered it, you know, it ended up being a blessing. Because a lot of people, unfortunately, Amelia didn't live through it. Wasn't able to overcome it. But a lot of other people, you know, a lot of her friends, a lot of her family, it changed them forever. Because, you know, it made me more aware of my health, made me more aware of my dependence upon God, and so on and so forth. And so even in adversity, even in bad things, you need to look for, quote unquote, the silver lining. You need to look, you know, what good is going to come from this whole thing. You know, Romans 8:28 says that, "And we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love him, to those who are called according to his purpose." And so, as I said, you know, many people, many friends of Amelia, many of her family were positively affected by her getting the cancer. You know, one of the little things, when Amelia, you know, before Amelia passed away, she was in the Indiana hospital for the 6 months prior. She was in there, you know, 3 weeks in, 3 weeks out type of thing, just in and out for various things, and getting patched up and sent home. And I remember, it's probably, you know, a couple months before she passed away, but I just visited her and thinking, you know, Amelia's not worried about, you know, is the cream cheese going to be delivered today? She's not worried about, you know, how the employee's going to show up. I mean, she's staring her eternity, you know, right in the face. And so the things that I tend to be concerned about, I mean, all I have to be concerned about the day-to-day little things, but they cannot take priority of our lives. We've got to realize that, you know, one day we're going to leave this earth, and the little things, you know, the little problems, the little difficulties, that's what they are. They're just little roadblocks, little obstacles that we have to overcome. But we can learn to be thankful for all those things. Learn to be appreciative of each particular day. Being thankful increases our faith. You know, the more we acknowledge God providing, the greater our awareness of his provisions will be. And the result, you know, as a result, our role in all the providing becomes less. We begin to realize that we didn't have all that much to do with the provisions that we have, the food on the table and so forth. You know, we had to get up in the morning, like I said, but you go to work and so on. But it's really God who created the opportunities, God who created the economic systems, God who created the, you know, gives the farmers the skills they have and the abilities they have, and gives the, you know, the seeds the ability to grow and stuff, so we can eat. So all those things, the more we acknowledge God's role in the whole thing, the greater or the lesser our role becomes. A bunch of these things here. Being thankful, like any attitude, is a mindset, not a choice. Let's turn over to the last verse here, Philippians chapter 4. And I'm not going to key in on the verse you think I'm going to, but I'm going to read it anyway. Philippians 4, we're going to read 4 through 8. The key verse is verse 8 there, but pick up in verse 6 about being thankful. Starting in verse 4, Philippians 4:4, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. Let your forbearing spirit be known to all men. The Lord is near. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all its comprehension, shall guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, if there's any excellence and if anything worthy of praise, let your mind dwell on these things. So that's the point. The point is that our minds need to be trained to look for the positive things, look for the good things. I mean, the world is trained to look for the things that go wrong, and it's when they want to complain. You know, we have to be, you know, contra world. We have to be, you know, different from them. We have to be the kind of people whose minds are disciplined, whose minds are trained to, even in the things that the world looks as a misfortune, we need to look at it. Okay, what's God trying to teach me here? What's God's purpose in this whole thing? And be thankful, not only for the good things, but more importantly, to be thankful for the adversity, for the struggles, for the disappointments in our lives, because realizing that God does love us and He has a reason behind everything He does. He's not some sadist up there just trying to put torture on us. He's got a purpose behind it all, and it's all because He loves us. Hebrews 12 talks about how a father, you know, disciplines his child out of love. Well, God is, you know, even more so. God, you know, never disciplines out of anger. He disciplines because He loves us. He corrects us when we need correcting. And when we get disciplined and we get spanked by God, we need to be thankful for that. I mentioned, well, I don't have time for this, but I mentioned earlier that our appreciation for God's forgiveness will move us to obey. Turn over to, if you would, to John chapter 14. You know, I quoted Romans 8:28. It says, you know, we know God causes all things to work together for good for those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose. So there's two little conditions there: to those who love God, and to those who are called according to His purpose. It's not just God causes everything to work together for good for everybody. No, there's two conditions. One of them is to love God. So turn to John chapter 14. You're probably already there. John 14, and I just want to read verse 15. Because if we really truly are thankful, if we really truly are love God, then it's going to be manifested in our actions. And John 14:15, Jesus says here, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. So there we have a definition. You know, Romans 8:28 says those who love God. Well, if you love God, Jesus says, you're going to keep His commandments. So if we're truly thankful, we're truly appreciative, if we truly recognize what God has done for us, then we are. It's going to be manifested. It's going to be followed through with our obedience to who He is. I mean, if we're willfully committing sin, then we're not truly thankful for what God's done for us. And so, you know, my exhortation this morning, and I hope it's been helpful. I had to skip a bunch of stuff, but hopefully it's been helpful. Is to, you know, help us, to each of us, to day in and day out, to take the advice, take the exhortation of Moses, to remember God, to remember what He's done, to look at everything around us, not just like our personal things, but look at the creation. Look what God, Stan talked about it in an opening a number of weeks ago, just about how, you know, how nature works with the, you know, us breathing the air, the plants, you know, turning that exhaled carbon dioxide back into oxygen, and so on and so forth. I mean, there's so many things in this world that you can look at in the creation itself. In fact, I got one more verse I got to go to. Romans chapter 1. Sorry about that. Romans chapter 1. But and this is one that this is one that Deborah Ford brought up in our Bible study last Monday. So I give her thanks for that. But Romans chapter 1. I want to read, beginning in verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness, because that which is known about God is evident within them, for God made it evident to them. For since the creation of this world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man and of birds and of four-footed animals and crawling creatures. So one of the side effects of this, of evolution, you know, just of how people begin to worship the creation rather than the creator, fail to recognize that God said he made it evident to everybody. The creation itself, no matter the North Pole, South Pole, or someplace in between, you are without excuse in knowing that God exists just by the creation itself. Well, mankind in general ignores that. They don't give God the glory that he has actually created everything. And it says there in verse 21, but even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks. And that's one of the side effects. That's one of the things that happens when a person fails to acknowledge God as their creator and God is providing all these things. They forget to give thanks. So we don't want to be that. We don't want to be those kind of people. We want to be the kind of people who recognize that God's our creator and give him thanks daily for what he has provided, the environment that he has provided, all the many, many complex things that we'll never know about. I mean, we'll never know on this earth. The scientists will never figure it out. We'll never know it, no matter how long we live, have it all figured out, what God has done for us.